court is ready to hear argument from petitioners in Gross v. Inns. May it please the court, Mr. Joe
Petitioners have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, may it please the court. My name is Joe Tooley. I'm here representing two firefighters paramedics, Sam Moore and Dennis Gross, who work for the City of Farmer Branch. This is an interlocutory appeal taken from the denial of a motion for summary judgment brought on behalf of these firefighters based on their qualified immunity. The city is also a party to the case, but is not a party to this appeal. Briefly, this case arises from a very tragic incident in which Mr. Ennis suffered an asthma attack. The paramedics responded to the 911 call. They attempted to revive him, were unable to do so. He went into a seizure. Ultimately, he passed away a week or two later. Suit was brought alleging negligence by the paramedics in what is, in essence, a medical malpractice case. We filed a motion for summary judgment asserting the qualified immunity of the paramedics as public officials. That was denied by the trial court. We appealed that in an interlocutory appeal to the Dallas Court of Appeals. They upheld the denial, so we're here.
What is the basis of our jurisdiction?
This is an interlocutory appeal, two bases. Interlocutory appeal under the statute, the Civil Practice and Remedies Code statute that allows interlocutory appeal. Secondly, there's
but that
a conflict.
Only allows that to the court.
I'm sorry?
That only allows interlocutory appeal to the Court of Appeals.
That's true. Secondly, there is a conflict in the Courts of Appeals on the application of qualified immunity. Some courts of appeals have applied the traditional three elements of qualified immunity, scope of authority, discretionary act, and good faith. Other courts of appeals, based upon this court's opinion in the Casson case, and that's what this case is about, is whether Casson extends to paramedics. That's the issue here.
The court, other who have applied the three-prong test?
The Casson court in San Antonio.
Right, the Casson court did so before the Supreme Court issued Casson, correct?
That's true.
And so arguably then they didn't have the opportunity to consider the Supreme Court formulation in Casson.
They did not. They did have the opportunity to consider the uniquely governmental test that the other three Casson paramedic case, Pack versus City of Irving, considered. Pack applied a fourth element to qualified immunity, which was similar, which was the test that was rejected in Casson. Casson replaced that element with a new test. So the issue is, do paramedics qualified immunity, is it analyzed under the traditional three element, and I refer the court to. By the way, this is one of those difficult cases that Justice Gonzalez anticipated in the chapter case of page 12. Traditionally, the qualified immunity elements are scope of employment, good faith, discretionary act, as this court established as recently in the Chambers case. Casson added a fourth element. Casson, as you know, involved doctors and nurses. Casson added a fourth element we're going to look at once we've found the scope of authority in the governmental employment. Once we've found there was discretion, we're going to add another level of analysis. We're going to determine whether the discretion was medical in nature or governmental in nature. This fourth element was applied by the court, the Dallas court, in the Pack case. There they applied a uniquely governmental test. They ruled that if the discretion is uniquely governmental, immunity applies. If it's not, there is no immunity. Casson rejected that test, instead using a governmental versus medical, a more gray test, and enunciated seven factors in the footnote.
Let me ask you this. Why should an emergency room nurse have to comply with the medical versus governmental discretion issue, but an EMS technician not have to comply with it?
To start with, because Casson says she should. Casson is a doctor and a nurse. A nurse...
Because Casson obviously doesn't say anything about EMS technicians.
No, Casson referred to medical professionals, medical personnel, and Casson, as we've outlined, and I don't have a whole lot to add to what's in my brief in this argument. Casson talked about doctors and nurses, talked about the exercise of independent medical judgment.
Okay, but what independent medical judgment and decision making can nurses do? nurses typically have to follow doctor's orders when it comes to applying medical treatment. Do you agree with that?
Yes, sir, I do. Nurses, however, are licensed medical professionals under 25 Texas Administrative Code, Section 151.2. Licensed medical professionals includes doctors, nurses, physician's assistants, social workers, all professionals who have been subjected to this fourth element.
And officers in this case were licensed also, are they not?
They're licensed paramedics, but they're not within the definition of licensed health professionals, as are nurses, doctors, and social workers under that administrative code. Nurses are allowed to delegate certain acts. They're allowed to exercise judgment. They're licensed in the statutes, and I'm searching for that now, Justice.
What if an emergency medical technician were operating under the direct instructions of oversight of a physician? Say he called in and said, what should I do about this? The doctor said, well, do this, and he messes that up. Would that remove him from official immunity?
If he is negligent?
Yes. In other words, can there be some medical actions that an EMT person can be liable?
Certainly. If they take an action which is beyond the scope of their authority, if they take an action which is not in good faith, if they take an action which is ministerial rather than discretionary.
But under the four-point test, just focusing on the fourth point, can an EMT person, in your view, be acting in a medical way the same way we described it in Cassidy?
No, they cannot. Because EMTs, by statute and by regs, cannot exercise independent medical judgment. The statutes which govern the practice of medicine specifically state, and statutes and regs which govern the delegation of authority to paramedics specifically state that delegation cannot involve the independent exercise of medical discretion.
What happens when an EMS technician shows up on the scene of an accident and can't figure out what is wrong with a critically injured person? Don't they have to go through their own differential diagnosis about exactly what kind of emergency care to render to the victim?
EMTs are trained. They are not allowed to diagnose. That's a practice of medicine that involves independent judgment.
I'm not talking about, you know, making some long-term diagnosis, but they have to quickly figure out what is wrong medically with this person. So they don't just pick them up. For instance, as a classic example, if you come upon someone who's injured in the road, they're going to have to first of all determine whether or not there is a potential problem with a spinal cord injury. If so, they're going to put them on a board. If not, they won't worry about strapping them down to the board. They will treat them differently. That is making some type of medical decision, is it not?
No, that is following the instructions and protocols. EMTs are strictly governed by what's called protocols. By law, they cannot function except under the direct orders of a physician. Those direct orders come in two forms. One,
then why would their acts not be ministerial, according to your argument?
Because there is some discretion involved. For example, if I put a Band-Aid on a kid at a campout, I've got to exercise some discretion as to where I put the Band-Aid, how I put it on. But that's not an exercise of independent medical judgment. That's not a practice of medicine under the statute. EMTs are trained to observe symptoms, communicate those symptoms to physicians, and follow what the physicians tell them, either on the radio or in their written protocols.
And going back, tell me how nurses practice medicine.
Nurses are allowed under the statutes, and we had this in our brief, Justice, nurses are allowed under the statutes to delegate certain tasks in their judgment. They're allowed to develop plans of care. They're allowed to make nursing assessments. Nurses are allowed to make diagnoses. Nurses are specifically charged to alter or adjust the care plan of a patient if they detect something is wrong. Right? Paramedics have none of that discretion. Paramedics cannot delegate anything. Paramedics are specifically precluded by statute from the exercise of independent medical judgment or from the exercise of independent medical discretion. And it is that very type of discretion that Cassin's aimed. Cassin properly and followed the majority of the jurisdictions around the country when it said, we will not grant qualified immunity to a situation that involves the exercise of medical discretion. The majority follows that. The majority of the country, however, also does not engage in that fourth level of analysis when the qualified immunity of a paramedic is at issue, in recognition of the fact that paramedics are precluded by law, precluded by the doctor's orders, precluded by their own training, from engaging in the very type of discretion, of independent judgment, to which Cassin is intended to apply. The discussion of Cassin talks about medical profession. However, they also more narrowly talk about medical professionals, health care providers, and doctors and nurses. Cassin discusses the discretion, the duty of care that's imposed upon medical professionals. EMTs and paramedics, by law, cannot do that. They're not licensed health care professionals under the statute. They cannot exercise that kind of judgment. The regulations, administrative code, allow a physician to delegate administrative, technical, or clinical tasks which do not involve the exercise of independent medical judgment. Those very words are in the Department of Health regulations, and they appear over and over again. Nurses do perform patient assessments, and this is found in 22 Administrative Code, Section 217.10. It's in our brief. They perform patient assessments. They make diagnoses. They develop a plan of care. They evaluate a patient's response to care. And they clarify any order or treatment regimen that the nurse has reason to believe is inaccurate, non-efficient, I'm paraphrasing there, or contraindicated. Nurses may also delegate certain tasks, if appropriate, in the nurse's judgment. That's found in 22 Administrative Code, Section 218. Paramedics and EMTs have no such authority. EMTs are basically the recipients of first aid training. They're trained to observe symptoms, report those to a doctor, follow the doctor's instructions. Sometimes the instructions come in the form of a checklist. The EMT has a book with him. If he sees a certain symptom, he follows the directions in that book strictly. He cannot deviate from that book absent a physician telling him that. The administrative regs, the Medical Practices Act, and their training make that entirely clear.
Actually, an EMT is trained to stabilize the injured party before treatment begins. They do exercise some medical judgment depending on the scene and injuries that exist at the time, and they have the authority to stabilize the condition. And the stabilization is really within their judgment based on their training when they come upon it. And if they are overwhelmed, if there's two there at the scene, but there's three people in life-threatening conditions, they have the authority to gather some volunteers to assist. So they do have some authority to do that. So the emergency people on the ground at the scene function not too differently than emergency personnel at a hospital who receive a body that's injured.
The difference is just the emergency people in a hospital are in a hospital. They're not out on the side of the street. They are licensed healthcare professionals.
They could be in a government hospital just like they could be in a government vehicle.
And EMTs do stabilize people, but they do it strictly following the doctor's orders. They don't have the discretion to deviate from those protocols.
Do you know if there are other emergency people like police officers or firemen who do the same thing, the same sort of first aid thing that an EMT might do if an EMT is not available?
And EMTs, that's all they are firemen who have had some medical training, who have the EMT certificate, just like police officers. A lot of those are EMT qualified.
Do you know if it's common for police officers to act in that same way if there's not an EMT available, or is it not?
I do know that, as a matter of fact, from personal experience. A police officer arrives on a scene, part of his duty, part of his scope of employment is to give medical aid. That's part of the public safety function. And it gets into the public policy argument we have for why Cassin should stop at the hospital over this DPS officer back there. He went through basic training. As I recall, they get some first aid training. I think the state may give them some CPR. Part of her duties is providing public safety.
Is the private sector providing the EMT?
There are, in the same manner as some jails, contract with private people to provide jailers. Some cities contract with private entities to provide EMTs under the auspices of local government, generally a county. However, public safety, emergency medical services, that is a government function. There is not a private counterpart like there are private doctors, there are private hospitals out there, there are private counterparts to the public aspect. There are no private EMTs. There are private companies who contract with government agencies to provide that service, but there's no purely private EMTs in existence in either area, unless it's somebody on working in a plant or something like that.
But historically, weren't there originally private organizations that tried to provide ambulance and emergency services?
Historically, ambulance services in Texas were provided by funeral homes, and those were provided under contract.
Over time, municipalities, counties took over this service, emergency service, if private entities couldn't afford it or whatever. It took over the emergency service, and it just so happens in the historical context that they moved these services within other emergency services the CL provides, like the fire department. So it just by happenstance, firemen now are the EMTs.
I don't agree. Emergency medical services initially were simply guys working for a funeral home because they happen to have an ambulance. They would respond to ambulance calls, but they did it under contract with the county. The county reimbursed them for that. They didn't do it on their own. They didn't charge privately for that service. That was still a public service. That ultimately evolved into the provision of more sophisticated, more effective emergency services, opposed to originally just a taxi service. You go pick somebody up and take them to the hospital when they call for help. They recognize we have police officers, we have firefighters out there who already have medical training, who, if CASN is to be extended to paramedics, it would also be extended to the police officer who stops and tries to help somebody at scene. It would extend to this DPS officer. If one of us falls out in here and she has to give a CPR, I submit she would lose her qualified immunity if CASN applies to a paramedic. So historically...
Which did happen once, actually.
I don't know. Let's hope it doesn't happen again. Historically, public safety and the provision of emergency medical services has been an exclusively governmental function. It has evolved into being provided by police and firemen. DFW Air Force, for example, all of their police officers are cross-trained as firemen, cross-trained DMTs. So that's part of their job. Their police officers are also charged with responsibility for all aspects of public safety, including emergency medical care. However, they are specifically by statute and by law prohibited from exercising independent medical judgment, which licensed health professionals exercise, and that's the type of judgment to which CASN is.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. Board is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Stevens, I will present argument for respondent.
May it please the court, my name is Steve Guggenheim, representing the respondent in this action today. When Ms. Ennis called 911, she didn't know whether or not a private ambulance service was going to come or whether the City of Farmers Branch was going to provide an ambulance service. She didn't know whether or not the City of Farmers Branch may have had a contract with some private ambulance service to provide 911 EMT services. What she did was call 911, and the petitioners in this case came to her house. Now, Ms. Ennis shouldn't be placed in a position of an individual who can remain uncompensated simply because it was the petitioners in this case who arrived at the scene of the accident, not a private ambulance service who arrived at the scene of the accident. If it was a private ambulance service, then she could have picked up the Yellow Pages and flipped through the ambulances, and there's a whole list in the Dallas Yellow Pages of private ambulance services who provide EMT services. And if she had called one of those services, they would have had a standard of care. And that standard of care should be no different than the standard of care that should be applied to petitioners in this case. They shouldn't be treated any differently than a private ambulance service would be treated if they were rendering EMT services to an individual. That's the exact rationale that the court held in Kasten, the majority of this court held in Kasten, when looking to determine whether or not this governmental versus medical discretion of care should be applied in that particular case. And throughout the Kasten opinion, the court referenced government-employed medical personnel. There was no distinction based on the type of independent medical judgment that the petitioners referred to in this case, or whether or not the medical personnel had some type of a license by the state to provide certain types of medical services.
Do we draw the line at ambulance drivers? What do we do about firemen who arrive at the scene with their hats and coats on to fight a fire and render emergency medical aid on the scene of the fire?
I think that as long as the firemen have a responsibility to perform some type of emergency services, and there is a major distinction between the type of emergency services such as CPR that may be rendered by a fireman and the emergency services that are rendered by an EMT paramedic. EMT paramedics are licensed to engage in more extensive Well, I think the fireman who was there, in this particular case, these were paramedics who came to the scene to render first aid. They also happened to work for the fire department. If these individuals are trained as EMT paramedics, and that is what they do, they are medical professionals who have been hired by the City of Farmers Branch to provide sophisticated emergency medical treatment to individuals who are injured at the scene of an accident.
The question is, what standard would apply if they weren't? What's the answer to that question?
Well, I think if they are licensed and if they are performing medical services.
Listen to me. The question is, if they're not EMTs, if they're just firemen or police officers, what standard would apply to them if they were rendering similar kind of first aid?
The same standard, because they are rendering medical aid, they are performing services which require medical discretion. And if firemen are going to engage in those types of practices, they need to do it with the same standard of care that anyone else is. But if the fire department is not going to train its personnel to perform those kinds of services, then they shouldn't perform them. But if they're being trained to perform them and they're going to the scene of an accident and performing them, they shouldn't be allowed to kill people because they didn't do it right.
Well, so I guess we ought to adopt a policy that what you're asking, I think, is to say the public policy doesn't train ambulance drivers. If they're going to provide that service, they just be a taxi, and you're giving a disincentive to provide emergency care at the scene of emergency.
Well,
I don't understand what you're saying.
No, I don't think it's a disincentive. I think the public pays for, and in fact they're billed for, emergency medical services. If the government's going to provide those services, just as it provides many other services like public hospitals where we have doctors and nurses, and if we're licensing doctors and nurses to perform those services, the same rationale would apply. Well, then maybe people just shouldn't perform services in a hospital or other services because they might be exposed to liability. But I don't think we can look at it from that analysis. We need to look at it from the analysis that this is a service. The government pays paramedics. Paramedics are paid. The public pays for them. And in fact, is billed for the services after the services are rendered. They are licensed by the state to provide emergency medical services. And in fact, EMT paramedics is the highest level of paramedics governed and licensed by the state.
Why should we apply the same rationale to a fireman who goes and fights the fire? We're billed for it one way or another. What if they're negligent in putting out the fire on our property? Why shouldn't we apply that same rationale?
Because
the government is applying it, we're paying
for it. The principle of official immunity and the whole theory of official immunity is to protect government officials who are performing certain types of governmental functions. In the case of medical service providers, I think there is a special relationship. Once that particular paramedic or doctor or nurse or psychiatrist has a special relationship with a patient, as opposed to a building that they're putting out, that special relationship requires some standard of care. And we cannot provide that if you engage in this special relationship, if you provide services, if you are performing what you've been hired to do and what you've been trained to do, you are rendering services to a specific person. You're trying to help that particular person. And just as a doctor has a standard of care and a nurse has a standard of care, psychiatrists and social workers have standards of care when they're providing treatment to individual patients. That should be no different than any other medical care provider providing individual specialized services to a particular patient. And the whole theory of governmental immunity simply does not provide, in many, the majority of states, in fact, have recognized that there is this distinction between the implementation of public policies and the carrying out.
The majority of states treat emergency.
Well, in fact, the only state, which is Michigan, which the defendant, the petitioner cites in their brief, in which this court rejected the Michigan approach in the Kasson case, which have held no distinction between medical and governmental discretion. However, the majority of states have held that with respect to medical discretion.
I'm asking specifically on emergency.
Well, there are very few cases which have decided the issue with respect to paramedics. And in those cases, in fact, I don't know of any other than in Michigan, and there are some other states which have adopted statutes which protect paramedics under certain circumstances, and some of those are the cases that the petitioner cited. Those are distinguishable because the legislature has acted in those states and decided to limit the exposure of paramedics. Well, the legislature in this state hasn't done that, and that should be something that this court should leave to the legislature to do. However, taking into consideration the common law official immunity and excluding those cases in which the courts have looked at some type of a legislative enactment to limit the liability of paramedics, when looking at why we have official immunity, the reasons that we have official immunity are not there to protect paramedics and other medical care providers who are providing medical services and engaging in medical discretion.
Are there any cases that hold
you away? Yes, there are. And in fact, many of the cases that were cited by this court in Kasson in adopting the standard we applied in Kasson, many of those cases were cited in the Kasson court. They did not deal with
That's
paramedics.
That's question. Are there any case law there around the country that deal with paramedics?
Yes, there was a case in Florida. In that particular case, prior to that, the Supreme Court of Florida has adopted a categorization of different types of governmental acts. And in those four categories of governmental acts, the state of Florida has characterized the rendition of professional and medical services provided for the health and safety of the public into a category four. And following that court, the Court of Appeals in Florida held that paramedics fell into that category four because they were rendering medical aid for the health and welfare of the public. And in that particular case, the court held that paramedics are not immune. Now, the Florida court has done something differently than this court has done because it has categorized different acts of governmental activity and determined whether or not immunity would apply depending on which category the particular act fell in. But there are no cases, other than the case in Michigan, which dealt specifically with paramedics and in which there was not an official immunity statute which specifically held that paramedics were not engaging in some type of medical discretion. And this court specifically rejected the Michigan approach in Kasson, in determining that the courts need to look at the governmental versus medical discretion test.
Do you concede that this court has jurisdiction in this case?
No, I don't believe this court has jurisdiction because I think the Court of Appeals specifically followed this court's holding in Kasson, and therefore the court has no jurisdiction in this case.
Do you think there are, in your view, actions of EMTs for which they would have immunity, such as, for example, in your case, if the EMTs had decided to take a person to a hospital within the city, such as Stedman Hospital, rather than perhaps a closer hospital, such as Medical City, because it was city policy to take them to a hospital within the city if possible. Would there be immunity for that?
Yes, I think so. And I think the distinction in that particular case, like in the Cassis v. Gillen case, was that the claims of negligence were not in the actual performance of the paramedic's rendition of medical treatment, but was in the decision by the paramedic not to take the plaintiff in that particular case to the closest hospital. Well, the evidence in that case showed that the reason that the paramedic didn't take the patient to the closest hospital is because there weren't enough beds. And the fact that there weren't enough beds was based on the lack of funds, and that was certainly a governmental function. In this particular case, however, there is no evidence whatsoever, and there was no evidence before the trial court, that any particular governmental function colored any of the decisions made by the petitioners in this case, which we claim were negligent. In fact, all of the claimed acts of negligence relate solely to the manner in which, or the lack thereof, that the petitioners in this case rendered medical aid to Mr. Ennis. There was no evidence whatsoever that there was any governmental concern which had any role whatsoever in the defendant's decision not to do certain things that we claim they should have done. And I definitely agree that if governmental concerns did play some role, and there was evidence that governmental concerns played a role in the decisions which we claim were negligent, then there may be immunity in that case. And I think that's the very circumstance that the majority of this court recognized in Kasson. And in those instances where there is a combination of governmental and medical concerns, that the balancing test needs to be applied. And even in this particular case, I think even if we were to apply that particular balancing test, the balance would weigh in favor of the innocence in this particular case. And
what about this circumstance? If a police officer was called to a scene and recognized that probably something medically should be done, but realizing that we had just written in Gross versus Ennis that he might have liability for that, he decides maybe I better just wait. And during that waiting period, something happens. Would he have immunity for that decision or not?
Well, I think in that particular situation, we're dealing with a police officer. A police officer is not a government employed medical provider. If the police officer had some responsibility in that particular case and some training, and I don't know what the circumstances of the training of police officers and what particular cities require that those police officers do. But if, for example, that police officer was supposed to provide CPR or some type of medical assistance, which the failure to provide that ended up killing someone, then I think in that particular scenario may call for a different result. But we need to look to, as the court referenced in Kasson, government-employed medical personnel, which is exactly what the petitioners in this case were. They were government medical personnel that was certified EMT paramedics. That was the only reason that they were at the Ennis household that day is because they are paramedics and because they are medical care providers. And the only reason they were there is to provide proper medical treatment to Mr. Ennis. And the claims in this case allege that due to those paramedics' failure to provide the appropriate medical treatment, Mr. Ennis died. And public policy should not allow the Ennis family to go uncompensated merely because the petitioners in this case happen to work for the City of Farmers Branch. The City of Farmers Branch, and one of the public policy arguments raised by the petitioners in this case, is that these paramedics should not be individually responsible for their negligent acts. The fact remains that under the city charter of the City of Farmers Branch, the city was required to purchase liability insurance for these paramedics, and in fact did purchase liability insurance for these particular paramedics, and so they are not, to the extent that there is liability insurance coverage, individually responsible for these acts. And in fact, regardless of how this court holds, the city is still going to be maintaining liability insurance for these paramedics to cover them in certain circumstances where they still might be liable. So there is not going to be this stream of lawsuits. In fact, if we look at the number of lawsuits over the last 10 years that have been filed against paramedics in the state of Texas, can probably count it on one hand. It just is not something that is going to affect the rendition of medical services. Paramedics should operate no differently if they were exposed to liability than if they weren't exposed to liability, for the same reason that no medical care providers should act any differently depending on whether or not they may or may not be liable. In fact, the threat of liability may encourage them to provide better service. And for those reasons, we believe that the court should affirm the trial court's ruling and should find in this particular case that under Cassin, that these paramedics were medical care providers and they should not be immune from liability in this particular instance.
Any other questions?
Thank you, counsel.
EMTs and paramedics are firefighters. They get, in this case, $150 a month to ride that ambulance instead of ride that fire truck. Many of the firefighters on the fire truck are EMT qualified. They want that extra money. If these men are exposed to med-mal cases for doing their job on the side of the road, they're going to say, thanks, but no thanks. I'll get back on the ladder truck. If I may regress a couple of decades, do we really want, and police officers and firefighters all receive medical training, state required training to get their license. Do we
for
really
practical purposes, is that good? In other words, if they think, well, I get to do the insurance to cover me, so I don't have to worry about it, are they all going to be running from serving as emergency medical technicians for one? The second part of the question, we all know that doctors and nurses are liable. We don't see them running for the exit because of the fact that they can be held liable for treating patients. So what's your response to this?
I'm sorry, the first one was, do they, paramedics, I think, are covered by insurance. Some are, some aren't. There's no duty necessarily, absent an individual city occurrence. There's no duty by a city to provide EMS services, no duty to provide a fire.
Let's look at this case in particular. In this case in particular, paramedics are covered by insurance. With that in mind, does your argument still have any validity that if we were to rule against paramedics in this case, they're going to be running so back and jump on the fire truck?
And so, these guys don't like to go through this. Nobody likes to go through this. Nobody likes to put forth their best efforts to save people, to go through the disappointment, which is going to happen when you've had somebody die in your arms. It happens to these guys in the field. And then on top of that, when you're dragged through a lawsuit, they don't want to go through that. I wouldn't want to go through that. I didn't want to go through that. Do we want our police officers who've had medical training when they come on an accident scene? If I may regress, and pull somebody out of the car and you try to give them medical aid but it doesn't work, do we want that police officer subjected to medical malpractice action?
Well, applying the language of Cassin, though, shouldn't police officers who provide medical training be carved out because, as Cassin said, we hold that government-employed medical personnel are not immune from liability. And I don't consider a police officer to be a government-employed medical personnel person.
I don't consider a police officer to be a medical personnel. I don't consider a firefighter to be a medical personnel. I don't consider a firefighter who happens to be assigned to an ambulance who is restricted under the statutes from exercising medical judgment to be a medical personnel, as that term is used in Cassin. Cassin, medical personnel was the broadest phrase, the broadest term used in Cassin. Cassin also used health care providers. Cassin also discussed the doctor and nurse that were before the court in that case. Cassin talked about these people in terms of the independent judgment, the independent discretion that they exercise. They talked about these people in terms of talking to nurses. They can look at the sister in the one. They are trained to provide specific medical services at the direction of the doctor to do specific physical tasks, basically band-aids and drugs.
And you're not, well, talk about drugs. And you're not arguing that what they do sometimes is pretty sophisticated medical service.
Compared to my ability to do it, yes, it is. Compared to a doctor and nurse, no.
Sophisticated compared to what a policeman responding to a traffic accident could do on the scene.
That depends on where the policeman is EMT qualified.
Well, let's talk about it. Let's assume that the policeman is EMT. He's not in one of those big trucks.
He doesn't have the equipment, these guys, probably.
These guys are hired to man these trucks, to respond to emergency procedures, with the knowledge going there that they may be called upon to provide pretty sophisticated medical services.
At the direction of a physician. that they're placed.
Why couldn't a line be drawn then between personnel who are hired to man this kind of service, even though they're employed by the fire department? Why couldn't that be an accurate line drawn for medical personnel hired to provide medical services as opposed to a fireman who shows up on a scene and incidentally provides medical service, or a policeman who shows up on the scene and incidentally provides medical service?
If I'm a fireman and I show up on a scene where there's an ambulance and two of my other firefighters who are paramedics on the ambulance, I have EMT qualifications, I can jump in and help out. I don't know how that line affects that. If I'm a policeman and I have my EMT certificate, and there's a lot of them out there, and I'm on the scene of catastrophe, there's a lot of people hurt, you've got two paramedics and six hurt people laying on the ground, I'm going to pitch in there and help. I've had training to operate their equipment. That line doesn't exclude me. If I'm a bailiff in a courtroom and I've had CPR training as a part of my duties, and I jump in and give CPR and one of us is falls out, that's pretty sophisticated in my mind. I don't know where you draw the line. Once you go beyond that hospital door, I don't know where you draw the line. I think, logically, it's almost got to be there. And other states have recognized that. Delaware, Michigan, Georgia, Illinois, Tennessee, California, that's in our brief. It's in the International Association of Firefighters, Amicus Brief before the court. They have discussed, and I have discussed, I think, very thoroughly, states which apply this court analysis, apply it to doctors, psychiatrists, licensed medical people.
I think you're getting beyond the question, Justice Enoch answered. Beyond answering this question. That concludes the argument in the second cause, and the court will now take a brief recess and come back to hear the final arguments.
All right.